Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We are going to have Pedro with us today. Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider and Analyst. Zach Greinke is 0-2. And as we get towards his next start, which is Friday, I want to talk to Pedro about where he is at and what the word is around Major League Baseball and Greinke so far. And this whole social anxiety as the losses pile up, two of them so far. A lot of you did not like the Diamondbacks uniforms yesterday. So I think Pedro and I may weigh in on that even before Pedro. I don't know. But I watched their game yesterday against the Dodgers. And at first it was like, who are these guys? And then I got into baseball. I'm fine with it. Some of you just get all wound up. For whatever reason in our culture, in our society, what people wear seems to be at times more important than what they do and how good they are at doing it for whatever reason in our culture. I can't stand those uniforms, so I'm not going to watch. Why won't they go back to how they used to be back in the day when they won the World Series? I'd rather see the Sedona Red. I don't know. I'd rather just see a win. I don't know. I'd rather see Pat Corbin strike guys out, and he was pretty good yesterday. Anyways, we're going to talk with Pedro. Jake Plummer is going to be with us today. Usually we Skype with Jake, but he's at an airport in Denver. And we'll talk with the former Cardinal, Bronco, and Arizona State Sun Devil star. I want to talk to Jake. His name actually popped up when Brock Osweiler signed with Houston. Jake's name popped up and about being with the Broncos. So is he truly thinking of this, about this? And then I want him to break down the quarterbacks at the top of this year's draft. So whether it's Wentz or Goff, there's this belief now that Wentz and Goff could be better than Mariota and Winston. And I don't know when I think about it that a guy playing football at North Dakota State and a guy that's at a program that at best is mediocre in the Pac-12, at best Cal was mediocre, versus a guy who's at Florida State and a guy who's at Oregon and the competition that they've seen, A. B, is it just a matter that the NFL, there aren't very good quarterbacks from top to bottom? There aren't. And you may say, well, they're there and you're not. No, I don't look at it that way. It's just watch as the season progresses in the NFL and it becomes dog meat. It does. Guys are just chewed up, beat up, spit out. A guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick is saying no to the Jets for millions and millions of dollars. And Ryan grew up here in the Valley. But Ryan Fitzpatrick is not Carson Palmer. He's not. So it's kind of crazy when you hear that. Like right now, the Browns at number two. So if the Rams are sitting there wanting to trade up to the Browns at number two, and the Eagles at number eight, and the 49ers at number seven, they're all wanting to trade up, okay? The Cardinals have no reason, if I bring it here locally, to trade that far up, nor do I think they have the assets to do it, but there's always a way. I think with Steve Keim, you could never sit here with an absolute and say, this is the way it's going to be with Steve Keim. Nobody could have seen Chandler Jones showing up in Arizona 3-4 weeks ago, right? Did any insiders have that? No. He was stealth about it. He went out and he made it happen. So I want to talk to Jake about all things around the NFL and if these quarterbacks are really worth trading up for. The draft is coming up in a couple weeks. So we're going to do some draft stuff today. Tonight, you know, I've got the Diamondbacks game, which De La Rosa's pitching, and De La Rosa supposedly got a phone call from Pedro Martinez about trusting yourself. So we'll see if De La Rosa is any different tonight. I've got that. I've got the Warriors going for history at home against the Grizz, and I've got Kobe's last game. So I got these three big things. Is there anything else, Eric, tonight? I don't know. Is there anything... Do you watch Survivor? Is that on tonight?
No, I watch Law & Order SVU, and I don't know if it's a new episode tonight, but the DVR will tell me if it
Bachelor?
Is or if
it isn't. You still in The Bachelor? Bachelorette?
No, didn't watch that. Didn't watch The Bachelor last season. And
You fell out of that one, huh?
Yeah.
Well, so...
It's not enough time. There's other things that are a higher priority on my TV list.
What are you going to watch tonight?
Well, I'm most interested in watching The Warriors. because it's history. I'm sure, I mean, and during the Warriors game, they're going to show a ton of Kobe highlights anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're both on the ESPN family of networks.
Right.
Wink, wink. I'm sure I'll watch the Diamondback game too. Tonight, maybe a night, maybe I'll go to a sports bar and I'll let them, I'll have three TVs so I can watch everything. Because they will all be going on simultaneously, which
sure.
is pretty cool.
I'm kind of the opinion that, not kind of, I'm of the opinion that I want to see the pregame of Kobe. So Flea is playing the national anthem. And I think that's pretty cool, the basis for Red Hot Chili Peppers. So that's cool.
You know what I want to see?
Yeah.
I want to see someone get creative tomorrow on social media and tell me the total amount of money made from the people who are going to be at Staples Center tonight for Kobe's final game.
I think the scalpers are getting on that.
Thousands. Has to be.
Has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah. A Lower Bowl ticket's probably $1,000.
And they probably, oh, I would think more than that.
Maybe.
Does Darren Revelle put anything on Twitter on that?
I'll search it.
That's a Revelle thing. They've had over 500 media requests for credentials for tonight's game. They've had over 60 from countries around the world coming to see Kobe Bryant tonight for the final time. Now, here in Phoenix, because we're a city that Kobe ripped the hearts out of more often than not. And there were a couple times where he got stomped on here.
And the Utah Jazz, by the way, are serving as the Washington Generals tonight for the
game. You know,
yeah, they're just like, that'll be a trivia question someday. So who did Kobe play in his final game in the NBA?
Why did they schedule, why not have it be Cleveland as the final game?
Yeah.
Or Golden State?
Well, because a lot of these times these games don't mean anything and you wouldn't want, like, last night we saw a bunch of teams resting guys. And
so they're going to have 20 of Kobe's former teammates that are going to be there tonight. So Shaq's going to be there tonight. And Shaq and Kobe had their ups and downs. Like for me, I may find my way over to tune in to hear John Ireland's final calls because he's probably going to start bawling like a baby. We had John on the air, was it 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago when the Lakers were here for the last time. And I used to work with John. I've known John for a long, long time. And he talked about how the relationship between he and Kobe came to be. So here's a play-by-play voice, the Lakers, that is going to be sitting there courtside tonight. Like when Charles was here, Al never got to do a last game for Charles because Charles was traded to Houston. And when Al was doing the game, or Al's been doing the games, when Kevin Johnson left, a favorite of Al's, when Steve Nash left, my point is, Al has not had many guys, if any guys, that have finished and had the one last game. I'm sure somebody's going to shoot me a note saying you forgot about this guy or that guy. That's how it works. But the point is, if you're John Ireland and you took over, there's a little brief gap there after Chick passed away, and you've done Kobe's games for, I don't know, 12, 15 years, however long John's been doing them, I would like to hear how he sounds tonight in that final game.
And by the way, we have breaking news out of Southern California. People in Tucson can rest easy. Greg Byrne will not be the new athletic director at USC.
Yeah.
But Lynn Swan will be the
new
athletic director at USC.
Shut up. Get out of here. Are you serious?
I would never go on this show and spew lies.
Are you joking?
Came out 5 minutes ago. Official. Lynn Swan named USC's next athletic director.
Oh, my God.
Hashtag fight on.
Okay. Let me just digest that for a minute. Really nice guy, okay? That just screams that we're a football school and that's all that we care about is football and everything else is just kind of off to the side because we brought back one of our... That would be like Jake Plummer being named the athletic director at Arizona State University. And Lynn Swan's a great guy. Really? Now, that is out of the box. That's got to be big cigar money, though. That's just got to be huge cigar money saying, yep, we had Mike Garrett here running the athletic department. Yeah, and he ran into the ground. Yep, we had Pat Hayden here, this football guy, and football's priority. And yeah, these other sports, we'll go get Lynn Swan. Yeah, that's a great idea. Seriously, I'm stunned by that. That's good news for ASU, I think. Look, the models of the Greg Byrnes and the Ray Andersons, rather than bringing in a former player, has Lynn Swan done anything within an athletic department? Wow, that's He's just there to raise money. That's it. That is it. Wow. Good for him. Whew. It's amazing. Play football and you got it all figured out, right? Stunning. Magic wrote a note to Kobe. I'm going to get into that a little bit later on in the show. But back on my thing for tonight, I'll probably watch the intros and all that for Kobe. And because in a typical NBA game, although the Warriors make the NBA worth watching from start to finish, that is the big difference. You can watch an NBA game. If you tune in with 4 minutes to go in the game, you're set. That 4 minutes will take 30 minutes at least, because there's going to be stops and fouls and this and that. Games are close. Games get away. There's really no reason to watch that at the start, because the finish of the Warriors, like if the Warriors are finishing the exact same time as Kobe's coming down to his final moments, then I'm going to be in a problem. I'm going to be in a pickle, because I do want to see the Warriors set the record. You would think they would just steamroll the Grizz. So then watching Kobe, and does Kobe go at it tonight? If you're refereeing tonight's game and Kobe's on the floor in his final game, he might get 20 fouls. They're not going to whistle Kobe and get him in foul trouble. They won't. The league will want him on the floor. Swallow your whistle. Kobe can do whatever he wants. I think it'd be great if he just dropped one on one of the refs tonight, just for him doing his thing. All right, Pedro Gomez is next. A lot to get to with Pedro around the Diamondbacks and much, much more. And then we'll have Jake Plummer here in about 15 minutes on the NFL draft and the Broncos quarterbacks and all that. I'm Brad Sussmat.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussmat.
Always good to catch up with Pedro Gomez, ESPN analyst, baseball insider. Okay, so Zach Greinke is 0-2, and he has social anxiety issues that have been well documented, and he's being paid $200 million. So, as I'm looking towards Friday night and his next start in San Diego, is there any reason for me to believe that if this losing continues, that the stuff off the field will weigh on him, and this $200 million, just two starts into it, is going to become a factor, Pedro?
You know, it's a great unknown, Brad. That is a great question, and really there is no answer. We do not know. Now, the Diamondbacks knew ahead of time about all of these issues. This is not a surprise to anybody in that organization, in the front office. These are well documented. Don't forget that when he was a young player with the Royals, he actually walked away from baseball for a while because of the issues that you know he has. So he's been able to control them, and it has not been an issue. He's been a tremendous pitcher. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there will be an issue, but there is absolutely no way to know.
It's something that I look at, and it's a good thing they went on the road, because they'd been home for all of spring training, obviously, and then they weren't good last week on the homestand. And I thought they played a pretty darn good game yesterday, a good win for them. But I think the Greinke...
Oh, tremendous win.
Yeah, but I think Pedro, just looking at Greinke here in his first two starts, I don't know if you can say he's been trying to do too much. Bottom line, it's been batting practice against him, and it's got to be somewhere within that organization. Some people have to say, boy, I hope he gets on track soon.
Well, of course. And really, when you look at the first two starts, it's really about elevating his pitches.
Yep.
You know, if he doesn't have 96, 97 mile an hour stuff. So he's not going to blow it by anybody. He's more about being a Greg Maddux type pitcher, a pinpoint location. I'm going to put the ball exactly where I want on every single pitch and execute every single pitch. That is really what his game has been about throughout his great 6-7 year run here, where he's been a tremendous pitcher, one of the best in the game. But when you start elevating pitches, when your changeup is above the belt, I don't care who you are, major league hitters are going to hammer that pitch. Even a rookie like Trevor Story, who had never played a big league game on opening day and hit two home runs off of Greinke because those pitches were elevated. So, you know, you look at Greinke, think of a Greg Maddux, because that is his game. And if he's not on his game, if he doesn't have his pinpoint location, he's going to have trouble. He is going to have trouble.
Well, here's the thing on that, Pedro.
Every start.
Here's the thing on that. Yeah. To your point on, it's not just him. He's got to be the front guy on this rotation. And Shelby Miller hasn't been good through two starts. And Corbin was really good, I thought, yesterday. De La Rosa's thrown tonight. So Pedro Martinez has reached out to De La Rosa, reportedly, to try to get him straightened out. Robbie Ray. He's got to be the anchor on this. And
no doubt.
Instead, to see Miller not be very good either, Mike Butcher's got to be feeling it too a little bit, the pitching coach. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, you're looking at Butch, who's in his first year here with the Diamondbacks. But I would say this, that it's a combined four starts for Miller and Greinke.
Yep.
They're going to combine for over 60 starts if they stay healthy. So if you're looking at a sample size, it's concerning because it is the first week of the season, but I would caution to have a little bit of patience. If we're sitting here on May 1st and they've each had four or five starts that look like this, without a doubt, then it's time to start saying something's wrong. After two starts each, let's give, you know, these guys are veterans. They've earned the right to have a little bit of leeway. The problem is that they don't have any built-in credit here in Arizona.
Right.
And that's always an issue when you bring someone in from another organization. There's no built-in credit. Listen, Paul Goldschmidt could go 0 for his next 40, that he will still be cheered when he steps up to plate because he has built credit up with the fan base here. When you come from the outside, you don't have any credit built up, and you've got to really hit the ground running. And if you don't, people are going to start panicking and saying, "What's going on? Why aren't these guys doing what they've done in the past?" If Greinke was off to an 0-2 start with the Dodgers, there would not be the same concerns because he has a track record. He has built up credit with the fan base, with the organization. The reality is that neither Shelby Miller nor Zach Greinke have any credit built up. And so that's why you're hearing D-back fans saying, "What's going on? Why aren't these guys right?"
Yeah. No, I agree with that. But I also think a week into the season, I know it's a small sample size, but a week into the season, they've been one of the biggest disappointments after all the offseason buildup. You know, on one hand, you can say Baltimore sitting there without a loss, and that's great for Buck and all that. But if all the buildup and all the hype, the Diamondbacks would have to be at the top of the list in terms of biggest disappointments early on.
Right now, you'd have to say that's probably accurate, especially when you consider how much they gave up to get Shelby Miller.
Right.
And how much they're paying Zach Greinke. There's no doubt. But, you know, it is only two starts each.
Mm-hmm.
If we're sitting here and they've each had five starts, and the numbers are similar, yes. But like I said, I, you know, they're one start away from everyone saying, "Oh, okay, let's walk off the ledge.
Yeah.
Let's sit down for a little bit."
Sure. De La Rosa, De La Rosa goes out and pitches well tonight, and they win. They have two wins over the Dodgers. You're going to get back around to the front of your rotation in San Diego. No, I get it. Did you see yesterday's game by chance?
Oh, God, it was fantastic.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's the type of win that can really energize a clubhouse. You know, it's opening day at Dodger Stadium. You've got all the pomp, all the circumstance going on at Dodger Stadium. It's a full house. There's so much energy for the home team. And to just snatch that away, that especially in the manner they did late in the game, that's a tremendous, tremendous win for the D-backs.
And yet, I opened my inbox last night and this morning, and all I had was uniform.
Oh, well.
Okay.
I know. I got some of that, too.
And even some of your people on – Eric was telling me even some people on SportsCenter were showing the Diamondback uniforms. I think we have some pictures of them. What do you make out of what they were wearing yesterday, since it was something that was brought up in the cycle? I could care less as long as they win, but did you like that look yesterday?
I personally don't. I'm more of a traditionalist. when it comes to uniforms. I like the fact that an organization like the Dodgers, if you look at a picture from the 1930s,
yep,
the uniform they wore in Brooklyn is exactly the same or very, very close to the one they're wearing today. Same for the Detroit Tigers, same for the Boston Red Sox, same for the New York Yankees. They're very, very similar uniforms. And, you know, these are tradition-rich organizations, yes, but the only way to get that is to not change your uniform every 5, 6, 7 years.
Right.
And, you know, these are organizations that, yeah, they may have strayed here or there, you know, during the acid 70s when clubs were trying all sorts of different uniforms. Yes, even the St. Louis Cardinals, even everybody, you know, everybody dipped a little bit their toe in the water. Not everybody, because the Dodgers and Yankees certainly did not. But other clubs did dip their toe in the water and stray from a traditional uniform. But they came back.
Yeah.
You know, the St. Louis Cardinals, when you look at the organizations that have the most tradition, they're not changing their uniform every few years.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to be said for that. You know, they're trying something new. You want to sell uniforms. You want to, excite maybe a younger fan base. I understand all of that, but I don't know. Sometimes you can go too far too.
You need a revenue stream to pay for Zach Greinke's contract. So that's just,
I'm not sure that those,
that there's not enough of those to pay for it. Before I let you go, what else has caught your eye here in week one of the season? I find myself, when the Cubs are playing, I have to watch them. That's just me. What are some things, if anything, that's caught your eye a week into the season?
Well, no, the Cubs, you know, that's an organization that definitely has become the flavor of the year, so to speak.
Yep.
Not even the flavor of the month.
Yep.
Because there's so many high expectations. You know, they unveil a clubhouse that looks a lot like so many different clubhouses, but because it's the Cubs, there's so much attention given to, hey, look, they have mood lighting. Look, they have these nice lockers. Well, nowadays, if you walk into 22 of the 30 ball clubs, they have home locker clubhouses that look like that, but it's the Cubs, so therefore it becomes a big story. You know, where have they been for the last 15 years when clubs were doing this? But hey, that's going to happen. I would say that yes, the Cubs are definitely interesting. I think the Nationals are off to a good start, and mm-hmm. we talked about Dusty Baker and the difference that he would have in that clubhouse. I think it's already showing. The Orioles are a surprise. I will say that. The Orioles are a big surprise because you look at the starting pitching did not look like it was there, and they've had some pretty good pitching and good offense. And hey, a good start can snowball. The Astros were off to a really good start a year ago. And look where it led them.
Yeah, the team here is not, though, so we'll see. I appreciate your time, as always. Thanks.
Okay, Brad.
It's Pedro Gomez with us every week. Always good to catch up with Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, baseball analyst, on all things around the Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball. Jake Plummer will join us on the other side about the top of the draft this year with the quarterbacks and this whole narrative that's starting to form that this top of the class with Wentz and Goff is better than Mariota and Winston. And also, did Jake really talk to the Denver Broncos after Brock Osweiler left about coming back to the NFL? That's all next with Jake Plummer. I'm Brad Sussman. Jake Plummer joins us now, and the draft just a couple of weeks away. We're going to get into the drafts of quarterbacks, the ones that he likes the most, the prospects, and all that stuff. But I have to clear up some stuff with you first and foremost, okay? So when Osweiler leaves the Broncos and goes to Houston, and I hear that the Broncos reached out to you, is this true? This can't be true. Or is it true?
No, there was no reaching out by the Broncos. They have their sights set on more capable, younger quarterbacks that should probably take a hit or two on the field. You know, I was joking around just saying, you know, the thought crossed my mind, which, you know, I mean, thoughts are always crossing my mind. And one of them was, dang, it'd be fun to play for Kubiak. We'd love to go run that system with the weapons they got and on that team. And so the thought crossed my mind to come play again, but it was a quick wishful thought that went away pretty fast once I woke up out of bed with a kink in my neck just from sleeping funny.
Okay, so somebody actually did somebody get to you and say, are you nuts? Because I wouldn't say that to you. If you and I were sitting together And you and I have had some straightforward conversations through the years. I would say to you, look, if it's on your heart, go for it. Just make sure your life insurance is paid up. That's all.
Yeah. You know, it was just a thought. It was just the whole probably my old quarterback ego still needed a little, you know, fan of the fire to pump me up a little. And I wasn't trying to stir any controversies up or discount Mark Sanchez being the guy they've signed at all. Just was a thought that, you know, in 5 years, if Koops is still coaching, Kubiak, he's still coaching with the Broncos, I'd still wish I could get in shape to come back and play for him, because those few years I played under his tutelage, it was awesome for me. I just had a blast and loved playing for him and that staff, and would love that organization.
Jake Plummer with us. What did you make out of Osweiler going to Texas?
It was a tough move for him. I felt, you know, that he got, I don't know, he didn't get his fair shake here. You know, sitting for 3 years, finally getting to play. I thought played really well in the heart of the season, really the toughest part of the season, late November, early December. Won some tough games and then got benched. Rather quickly to bring Peyton back in, which I felt, you know, a tough situation for Coach Kubiak and that staff to be in, to bench a young up-and-coming gunslinger that has, at that point, had a lot more skills than the guy that came in to replace him, maybe not as much on his shoulder as far as football prowess and knowledge that Peyton had, but the skill set was way more advanced than what we saw with Peyton through the end of the year and even most of last season. So it's tough. When you get benched for a player that you feel you're better than, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, along with the fact that if he were to stay in Denver, you know, coming off of a Super Bowl season, these fans here, if he didn't go 22 or 25 for 4 TDs and 380, would have been saying, you know, bad move to sign him very first game of the year. That's just how they are. So I think for him, he saw an opportunity to go to an organization that, Brad, you can tell me what your answer to this. What quarterback comes to mind when you think of the Houston Texans?
Exactly.
Yeah, J.J. Watt? No, yeah. He hasn't played quarterback, yeah, but he probably
right.
could.
Right.
You know, so for him, it's a chance to go and break new ground,
yep.
Take over a team that has a great defense. And I'll tell you right now, and it's not always about the money, but when you're a player in the NFL and with the looming, you know, things you have to deal with when you retire, most notably CTE and those studies, when you're getting $7 million more money to go somewhere else, you'd be a fool not to take that. So mm-hmm. I feel bad that he's gone. I wish he was going to stay here and play. But he's got to go break new ground and be the man down in Houston. And I think he'll have a lot of success down there.
That's been the story of the offseason, I think, when you look at the quarterbacks, obviously. And
yeah.
You know, Manziel to Denver, you were outspoken on. You'd like to see John there. Do you still feel the same way?
Of course. I think that, you know, this kid's obviously learning a lot about life as he's growing up. And he's still, what, 21? And I think back to when I was that young and when I was coming out of ASU and the success that I had there. You know, your reality is skewed a little bit at a young age, and that's really hard if you haven't had the upbringing to keep you grounded, to keep you on your 2 feet with the right people surrounding you. And I'm not sure, I don't know Johnny football at all. I've never met him. But what I see on the field is a highly talented skill set that not many players have. His ability to make plays, to make throws. But it's the circus that comes around him. And I don't know if maybe he just loves that more than he likes playing football. And if that's the case, then good for him. Go do your thing with your image and what you've developed so far. But he's a young kid that's learning, and I think that getting him into a organization like the Broncos with Elway, with Kubiak, with everyone around here, I think that he would find success and be a good quarterback, a good fit for that system. But, you know, he's got to take care of some demons and some things he's already dealing with outside of the game, which you hate to see young players have to deal with, but hopefully it'll teach him a valuable lesson and help him learn, you know, how to maintain his public image when he goes out and about and take things a little more seriously when it comes to football.
That's interesting there. Jake Plummer with us. So let's shift over to this year's draft. 2 weeks away, Wentz and Goff better than Winston and Mariota. There's that storyline that's starting to swirl around these two quarterbacks. Do you buy into that in this year's draft?
Not one bit. I don't know those kids personally. I've watched Jared Goff quite a bit. I haven't watched Carson Wentz much at all. But Goff, I can tell you right now, has that little factor, the it factor, that ability to get on the field, lead a team. He's tough. He can make all the throws. He does have a tall, lengthy body. And I think hopefully he's wiry and strong and able to take some of those hits. And that's probably one of the questions they have. But I saw him get blasted plenty of times playing in the Pac-12 against really good competition. And on a pretty poor team that didn't have the great defense to back him up, he made them competitive. And so for me, I really like Jared Goff. He's the only one that could possibly fit into that Mariota and Winston level. But you're talking those two kids, Winston and Mariota, came from programs that they were winning and the pressure was already there. And they played and they exceeded their expectations and rose above and were tone setters for both those teams. So I don't know if Goff and Wentz were quite like that or played in as many big games as those guys. So for them, I think their skill set is great. They got talent. They have the ability, but completely different. You know, those are two pretty highly skilled athletes, Winston and Mariota. And we'll see. We'll see what Wentz and Goff can do. But I do like Jared Goff. I think he is a great athlete and has the ability, if he gets into the right system, to do well in the NFL.
You throw a couple names at you. Lee Steinberg, who you know well, is representing Paxton Lynch. Paxton Lynch comes from a small program. Lee is working his magic, in my opinion. I had Lee on the show a couple weeks ago, of drumming up, you know this, drumming up the interest in with L.A. sitting there this year, needing a quarterback. That makes a lot of sense to me. But is Paxton Lynch a first-round pick? It sure sounds like he's going to be. Do you see first-round talent?
You know, I haven't seen him play. I didn't watch him play in any games this year. But I know he's a big, tall kid, and having height can be an advantage greatly for a QB to be able to, you know, enhance your vision downfield. But it also can be a hindrance if you're not athletic. And we saw that with Brock Osweiler. I mean, a real tall guy with great vision, but he's a good athlete. You know, Brock was a basketball player and had a chance to play at Gonzaga. I mean, this kid can move. So if Lynch can do that, if he's highly skilled as much as Lee's preaching and pushing, then, you know, there's a good chance for him to do well too. But it's such a big jump from college to the NFL. There's just so many things that go on, how you assimilate into the locker room, into the team that you're drafted by, you know, how you can relate to those players immediately when you're a superstar in college and then all of a sudden happen to be another rookie coming in, hauling guys' pads around and bringing in donuts in the morning and doing those things that you didn't have to do in college. You know, it's how well they adapt to that and how well their teammates take to them, I think, that will determine a lot of the success of these three young guys we're talking about, how well they can fit into the system and not come in trying to be the next guy. Just come in with your skill set, be confident, and then wait for your moment.
Last question. When you look at Arizona State, I'm going to ask you to put your Pac-12 helmet on here. You're a Pac-12 network analyst, of course. And all the change in the offseason, there's three quarterbacks that are down there and actually a fourth that Todd had signed in his class who he believes will get a shot this year as well. Does it concern you with everybody leaving the staff, or was it just time for Mike Norvell to go be a head coach and some of these assistants? And just the overall view from you towards the ASU football program right now, what do you see?
Well, I think you're talking about all the new staff and bringing in now. You're going to have a new quarterback taking over and go stand down there at the facility and look around. There's no stands in the bottom. They're ripping up the stadium. It has to, you know, feel sort of like a rebuild. Not a rebuild, but kind of a remodel on what they have. I think they got a highly successful program, and Graham's done a great job. They've got some great young players on defense. They got some stars on offense that are obviously have shown their worth at running back and receiver. It's who can come in as a signal caller and hopefully get that opportunity and you know, rise above the other rest of the competition. You know, I love the Perkins kid just because of the history of dad playing there at ASU. But, you know, Manny Wilkins has paid his dues also, and then we'll see what happens. I'm excited to see what QB comes in and takes the reins and can separate himself and then go out there, and hopefully he'll have the ability to make a few mistakes before he's yanked for the next guy and put the next guy in and hopefully there's patience there, especially with Coach Lindsey coming in with a new offense. You know, it's going to take a little bit of time. This spring, they got to learn the offense. Then through the summer is going to be huge on who takes over and kind of sets that tone. I mean, all the quarterbacks will do that. But, you know, who's going to take those reins, kind of like what Taylor did, you know, years back when he just kind of took over and he was the guy. And I know Graham likes to do that, likes to pick a guy that's going to be in there leading the troops. So we'll see. I'm excited, obviously, every year for what they can do. I'm real excited to see that stadium when it gets done. Right now, I hope they can have a field to play on because it didn't look too good. I was down there a few weeks ago and just a big dirt pile down there. But it's going to be exciting when they get that done.
Stay well. Safe travels. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Brad. You have a great one.
Got it. There's Jake Plummer with us. Of course, Jake jumping on board. Good to hear from him, as always. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So Magic Johnson penned a letter to Kobe Bryant because tonight is the final game in Kobe Bryant's career. And that's on my mind. I look up at Twitter while we're doing the show, though, today, and when Lynn Swann starts trending, and I'm in that space in life where if there's a former great name from the past, it's one of two things. Either they passed away or they did something really dumb. I can't fault Lynn Swann for this. So before I get over to this Magic letter, I can't get over the Lynn Swann hiring. If you missed it, USC announced today. And first of all, just that in its own right speaks to the arrogance of USC. Okay? Kobe Bryant is playing his last game tonight.
But that's exactly the reason why you announce a hiring of Lynn Swann as athletic director, as someone so astutely pointed out on social media. We all know about the Friday afternoon 5 o'clock news dump.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the Wednesday morning, same day as Kobe's last game news dump.
Okay, so and while I agree with you, hear me out on this.
Okay.
Do you think that USC is arrogant enough?
I see your point, too.
To
I know where you're going
we're
with
not,
this.
We're not news dumping here. This is USC. This is USC. We hired Lynn Swann, and we don't care what else is going on because nothing is bigger than Lynn Swann being named the athletic director. Do you see my point on this?
I do.
Do you think that USC could be one of those universities that would say, we're bigger than anything else going on, and we're going to see who shows up here today to cover this? You could be the athletic director at USC because you have the same qualifications as Lynn Swann. I could be the athletic director at USC because I have the same No, I don't have this. He's got his degree from USC, I think. He played football at USC, so you and I don't have that going for us. But we have everything else. If I'm a UCLA fan, I'm just thrilled today. You talk about just something that's so jacked up.
And you have to be an out-of-the-box thinker as an AD. You have to be a Ray Anderson. You have to be a Greg Byrne. You have to be some of the more successful ones that come in with a blueprint.
But does USC will say, we're thinking out of the box.
Does Lynn Swann have a blueprint? Does he need to have a blueprint?
Look, if the football team wins, nothing else matters to USC fans. Nothing. They can talk about Rod Dato, and they can talk about Paul Westfall, and they can talk about their track and their swim, and they can talk about everything. But if their football team blows, that's all they're known for. That's it. Man. So that caught my eye. Did you see any of the Trump family interview last night, by the way, on CNN?
No. No.
I was trying to watch it.
He's not having any more kids. I saw that. Thank goodness. He's like 80 years old.
I was working out last night. And before I got into my sports viewing, and I'd already watched the Diamondbacks game. And for some reason, it's like a car crash. Whenever he comes on, I just rubberneck. Like, I can't stop. It was 6 o'clock and like 20 minutes later. And I didn't even have the audio up. It was just watching them bounce back and forth. That caught my eye. This Magic letter to Kobe Bryant. So there's a website called The Playbook, and Magic wrote, Dear Kobe, and it says, from the desk of Irvin Magic Johnson. Now, I love Magic Johnson. I was on the air and had to read the story when he was diagnosed HIV, and I got a little weepy about it because growing up in Southern California, I was on the air during the race riots in L.A., there was the Lakers that was able to take our minds off it. I didn't grow up a Laker fan. OK, Okay, wasn't a fan. I'm not a fan of any team. If you just figure this out, I don't sit here and say, rah, rah. We have way too much of that, by the way, going on in our own profession. Way too much. Well, I grew up a fan of this team. Great. So you're never going to hold them accountable when they blow. But I get free tickets. Okay. All right. All right. I see. Let's just gray the line here a little bit. So that's the backdrop on Magic. I love watching him play. Absolutely loved watching him play. Steph Curry is about as close to me as watching Magic Johnson. But Magic, it feels to me like, has to be out there, has to be in the spotlight just enough. So on the day where Kobe is leaving, Magic pens this long read that's on magicjohnson.com or the playbook. Dear Kobe, I'm not going to read all this. Dear Kobe, for 20 years, I've watched you dominate the game of basketball from the Great Western Forum to the world-famous Staples Center. You've dedicated your life to becoming one of the greatest players. And I have to wonder right off the top of my head, did he really write this or just stick his name on it? Okay, was it a PR thing? You're an example to your teammates and fans all over the world, so on and so forth. So I guess it's something, if you're a Laker fan, there's a lot of people here in Arizona that haven't figured out, they don't live over in Los Angeles. And so whenever the Lakers are good, which has been not recently, they show up and they're just obnoxious. They're just, my team's great. My team's great. Yeah, your team blows. And then where are you? Tonight is a night to celebrate. I'm not one of those that makes a list of the top villains in Phoenix history. Please click here. No, that's not what we do. We'll never do that stuff. What we are is someone who appreciates, I think as a group collectively, we appreciate greatness and villains. And we've said this many, many times. Sports needs villains and so on and so forth. It's kind of like the Diamondbacks game tonight. I'm going to watch because late in the game yesterday, the two Diamondbacks got drilled. And so did a Dodger. And the game was a little bit, there was a margin there, but there's already really bad blood in the first game between these two. Two guys got drilled yesterday. Keep an eye on that tonight. So that's on my mind. Tonight should be the final night, mercifully, for Earl Watson to be the head coach of the Phoenix Suns. There's really no reason. And if Robert wants to send a message that all of this is unacceptable, then tomorrow he cleans house. Tomorrow. There should be a press conference tomorrow. Not a week from now. We don't need to. If I hear that you were analyzing all options, no. You have to put me in your front office, Robert, if that's the way it's going to be. Seriously, if nobody's telling you to clean house, if nobody's telling you that, look, if you want to send a strong message, am I the only one that has seen this? Am I the only one that's really pissed off about how you've run this thing into the ground? But at least I care. I'm not going to sit here and put out the little, oh, what a disappointing season for the Suns. But wait, let's see what they do in the lottery. No, we're not going to excuse it away. We're just not.
Not to interrupt your rant, but you ask average ticket price for tonight's Laker game. Darren Revell says $1,012 is the average ticket price.
And that's at 11 a.m. What's that going to look like at like 5 o'clock this afternoon?
That's a good point.
Because you know there's going to be some guys that come along.
Oh, yeah.
Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmatt.